98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
I got so much love for our radio program.
Bickley and Murata.
Welcome to the greatest radio show in the history of the universe.
Dan Bickley. Vince Murata.
This is the greatest radio show of all time.
Bickley and Murata.
This is the greatest.
You're listening to the greatest radio show that has ever existed.
Bickley and Murata. Bickley and Murata.
Let's start the show.
A tremendous Wednesday to all you Valley sports fans. We at Arizona Sports have the Valley covered today. We are going from Cardinal headquarters from minicamp to Chase Field, where Luke Lipinski, I rarely like to see the roof close in a baseball stadium. I was really happy to see that thing close about 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, it was getting a little hot in here, even though it was only about 9:30 in the morning. I was pretty excited to see that close, too.
We have a wicked show on tap for you today. Jared Carlin, let's get it started.
The Splash.
Splash.
The stories making waves in the sports world.
The Splash.
Get him up,
all right, story number one is if a guy like David Johnson holding out, skipping minicamp, wasn't disorienting enough, how about a baseball team that couldn't hit worth a lick all of last month, and now they come out and score 13 runs yesterday, back on their winning ways, 8-2 in their last 10. It's like May never even happened.
It really is, right? We talked at the end of May. Which month is going to look more like the outlier, April or May? And I think we all expected it was going to be just somewhere in between for the rest of the season. This feels like April again, except they're hitting.
Yeah. And what went down in May? Was it the tunneling? You heard from Mike Hazen today calling it an excuse. We got a lot of ground to cover with the Diamondbacks today. Zach Greinke, we have got our special radio station event, the 987 Club, where fans can come and watch the game. Always a great party. And you know what? It's a much better party when the team is winning, because nobody wants to go to a baseball stadium to watch a team struggle to score one run.
It's not really a party when you're losing every game 2-1 or 1-0.
No, I agree. Not a party at all. Item number two, the Arizona Cardinals. You heard Doug and Wolf all morning long broadcasting from team headquarters in Tempe. A couple notable stories happening here. Number one, the David Johnson contract dispute. I don't know why I keep getting held up on the word holdout. But I will, okay? Adam Schefter freaked me out. I'm getting held up on the word holdout. So that is still there. Nothing has changed there, except public perception seems to have shifted a little back into the running back's favor.
Yeah, I mean, this is somewhat to be expected, right? And you start to look at all the other elements at play here, and it's not just a professional athlete holding out for more money. I mean, it is that, but there's a lot more to it. And so when you look at what he has meant to this team and to this community, and you start to look at the volatility of playing that position in the NFL, I mean, it's never going to be 100% one way or the other, but you can see why more people are sort of on his side.
Yeah, I've got some thoughts on that I'm going to share with you. We're going to get into the bigger story at Cardinals camp, because it really does mark the beginning of a quarterback competition that is going to not only captivate the Valley, but a lot of national football writers as well. We'll get into that momentarily. Item number three, number four, whatever you want to call it, it's the NBA aftermath. It was the Warriors' victory parade in the Golden State Bay Area and the weirdness that seems to come out of there. The obsession with LeBron James and Charles Barkley finally coming out and saying, I'm not going to let this dude hijack my life, meaning he's done talking about it. And then the Lakers suddenly angry with Lonzo Ball. Real briefly, tell me what you thought about the stuff coming out of the Warriors' victory parade.
I mean, this is the best part of the season, right? This is the most drama is in the offseason in the NBA. They market it so well. The moment that's going to stand out to me, I know everybody's going to point to Draymond Green trolling LeBron James again, but that's what Draymond Green does. The awkward exchange between the Warriors' general manager, Bob Myers, and Kevin Durant in front of everybody, that was a little odd. I mean, you figure you probably don't win. Maybe you win both the last 2 years, but you are not where you are right now without Kevin Durant. You could tell it was just intended to be a joke. But when you make a joke in front of that many people with a player that's that valuable, it has to land.
And a player that sensitive and that temperamental,
yeah.
A player who has already created his own burner account. All right, so we've got Kevin Durant getting zinged at the victory at Parade. We've got Draymond Green claiming, I'm going to want to make max money sometime down the line. You've got Klay Thompson, who seems like he's going to sign a contract extension, but his father said it might not be that simple. You just wonder if money is ultimately going to divide that team like it frequently does with many others.
You figure at some point one of them is going to leave, right?
Yeah.
Look, if it's 2 years away from now and they win the next two titles too, then at a certain point all things are going to have to end. If it's me, if Draymond Green is the one that leaves, I think that you can replace what he does, or you can get by with without he does with Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, and Klay Thompson there.
Yeah.
Not to say Draymond Green doesn't do a lot of little things that help them win, but if you're going to lose one of the four, if it's him or Klay Thompson, I think you're still winning.
I agree with that. But when you throw in those David West comments that there was a lot of internal strife here that people did not know about, maybe it isn't all so kumbaya there. And you know what? I cheer for acrimony and discord in Golden State. That can only help us. On the LeBron front, I told you about Charles Barkley. He was in an interview and said, I'm not going to let LeBron James hijack my life. He's not coming to the Philadelphia 76ers.
Okay.
Basically said that Ben Simmons needs the ball. Joel Embiid needs the ball. LeBron is not a good fit for Philly. And then check this out. In Los Angeles, there is a billboard up that says LeBron, but it's not L-E, it's L-A-B-R-O-N. Get what they did there?
Very clever.
And the subtitle on the billboard was Cleveland and Philly, you can't compete with L-A.
Here we go. When do we know? We're going to know probably in about 2 weeks, right? I mean, it'll probably leak out before free agency even starts. I would think.
LeBron will milk this for all the drama that it is worth.
Yeah,
but
I guess
but your hammerhead point was right. The NBA offseason, for the last 2 years, it far exceeds what happens in the regular season and sometimes even the playoffs.
You know, you talk about the NFL and people will say there's no offseason in the NFL, and that's true. But I don't know that the NFL offseason is as consistently compelling as the NBA offseason.
No.
At least the NFL regular season is very compelling when they're actually playing games, whereas the NBA, all this stuff, in a lot of ways, is more dramatic than Game 37 between Memphis and Minnesota.
Could not agree more. All right, those are your items of your Daily Splash. Big broadcast for you today. We are live at Chase Field. Diamondbacks going for the sweep against the Pirates. It's a 12:40 start. We are going to be joined here by John Jay in just a little bit. Clay Buchholz is scheduled to join us. So there you go. Zach Greinke on the mound for the team that is once again winning. But we're going to begin talking before John Jay joins us about the Arizona Cardinals. And really quickly on the David Johnson thing before we move into the quarterback battle, here's what I think has transpired in the last 24 hours. I think the who of it, as we discussed yesterday, really governed the story, drove the story, elicited the strongest emotions. That David Johnson was no longer this sweet, humble, naive football player that was so different than everybody. He sounded like yesterday just another football player looking to get paid. And I think that angered people. In the last 24 hours, as people have become more rational, when its emotion is kind of like exited the conversation, I think people realize, okay, you know what? Maybe David Johnson isn't your average, ordinary football player. Maybe he's lost some of his naivete, but maybe what he's doing is just smart.
Or necessary. I mean, to a certain level, it's somewhat necessary. I think you get that initial shock, where, like you said, where everybody is thinking, wait, I thought David Johnson was different. And so there's that sort of, it's just shock probably from a fan's perspective. But then you sort of even things out and you realize, yeah, he probably is still different, but he's not that different. At the end of the day, this is still a business for everybody.
Yeah, and you know what? And we've talked, and Burns and Gambo talked about this. One of the other things that I think struck people about it wasn't just the who in terms of David Johnson being the guy who suddenly was taking a stand for contractual or monetary gain. It was the fact that the Arizona Cardinals have really been void of any of this kind of stuff for a very long period of time. They've been very fortunate to have really great, selfless leaders who were invested in the community, from Kurt Warner to Carson Palmer, always Larry Fitzgerald, and David Johnson always fit that mode as well. So the leadership core of this football team, they've been really likable, embraceable guys that a community can get behind.
Yeah.
So the Cardinals, even though they haven't won a Super Bowl, they've at least had this this spirit and this camaraderie and this vibe of an organization that is just bringing in high quality people. So they've got that. The holdouts and the management disputes with players. You see this a lot in other cities, and it used to be the defining trait of the Cardinals under Bill Bidwill, where the former owner, for all the good he did in the community, it often struck me that he was more into beating agents in negotiating games than winning football games.
Yeah.
And it seemed to be a priority that was really out of whack, and it was reflected in the standings, and it led to a lot of these weird decisions. The Andre Wadsworth holdout, the Anquan Boldin debacle, and even Kurt Warner, after showing his worth to the Cardinals, he had to go to San Francisco to get a free agent offer to bring back to the Cardinals before he even got paid. The whole dynamic has changed with the Cardinals, where Michael Bidwill has now proven that he is the kind of guy that is going to take care of his players. And he does it because he knows it's great business. It's allowed his image as an owner to kind of transcend many of his contemporaries. And it's made Arizona a much more popular free agent destination than it's ever been in the past. So now that we know all of that, I think there's also a feeling that, okay, maybe we should take comfort in the fact that even though David Johnson has kind of disrupted our little dream thing that we've got going on here with this football team, the Cardinals have shown an ability and a desire to not let this kind of stuff get out of hand, especially with the players who deserve it. And I think that no matter how we envision this going, I think we all kind of go, you know what, this is going to get worked out.
There's a lot of incentive on both sides for it to get worked out. And I think it's obvious from David Johnson's side what that incentive is. He didn't get to play last year. You understand why he wants more money, but at the most basic level, he doesn't want to sit out any time after missing 15 games last year. Nobody thinks he's really going to actually miss NFL games, or at least I don't, and nobody thinks he's going to miss the whole season sitting out. But let's just say that when you go into this sort of negotiation, that has to be your leverage or your stance of, I'm willing to sit out to the end of the season if it came down to it. Well, if he sat out to the end of the season, that's 2 years of not playing. He can't do that.
He can't do that. And I'm going to stick to my belief that David Johnson's heart is only half into this. And it's really just an instinctual response on my behalf. I don't know anything. But you watch his story, a kid who scrubbed toilets in college to make money, cleaned out asbestos, made it to the NFL, was so full of gratitude and joy to have reached this level and to have become an impact player so early in the NFL. He never struck me as a guy who cared a moment about money. In April, he is on the record as saying, my contract is not even my focus. It's not even an issue. It's not what I'm looking at. He showed up to the voluntary portions of workouts before all of this erupted. He is also a guy that out of that $2.9 million rookie contract that he initially signed, and he had no choice but to sign it, he's making $1.88 million of that this year. So compared to what he made, he's made a big raise. I don't think he really is unhappy. I think he just has been convinced this is what he has to do. I hope the Cardinals make it easy. I think the door is wide open for them to just get this done in a way where this just kind of gets extinguished as soon as possible. All right, much more on the Cardinals coming up in just a little bit. We'll get into Josh Rosen, Sam Bradford, coming up a battle that is beginning in earnest, or did yesterday. But now it is our great pleasure to welcome in one of the newest members of the Diamondbacks, a guy who had a big night last night, John Jay. Hey, John, how are you doing, man?
What's going on, guys?
Good to see you, brother. How are you doing? Good?
Everything's good. Everything's good.
All right, so, you probably don't know the hell Diamondbacks fans went through in May because you weren't here. Since you've been here, even though it took you a while to get rolling, this team's been rolling. You don't even know the struggles we went through last month, do you?
No, it doesn't matter. We're here now, and a lot of baseball to be played.
Yeah, they're undefeated since you got here. I don't know if anybody's made that connection. I'm sure somebody probably has. But what is working right now for this team offensively? Because that is something that wasn't clicking for about a month before you got here.
Well, from what I see, I just see you guys going up there and having good at-bats, really grinding it out and, not trying to do too much and trying to pass the line, get on base for the next guy, and, that's how you win baseball games.
Yeah. All right, when you got news you were coming to Arizona from Kansas City, what was your reaction? How did you feel about all of this?
I was super excited, obviously I knew, last year, playoff team, and I keep tabs on the team and saw what they were doing this year. And, you know, I was just super excited to be back in this environment, you know, playing for the hunt for October, which is what this is all about.
Can you take us through the atmosphere on that game 2 nights ago now, where you guys are down 5-0 and then Chris Owings gets hit, and all of a sudden it's not just, you know, that could have easily been he gets hit and then the inning ends or whatever. You guys explode for 9 runs in 2 innings, and it seemed to spark last night maybe even as well.
Yeah, you know, good energy, you know, after that, you know, you can look at it two ways. You can either, you know, lay down or, you know, keep it going. And, you know, we found a way to you know, score some runs, get guys on base, and, you know, just keeping it going. You know, it's a long season, and, you know, I love the way guys grind out at bats and, you know, guys are into the game.
There seems to be, and Torrey Lovello talked about this, there seems to be an old school approach about retaliation pitches and a new school that thinks maybe allowing a pitcher to fire a baseball at 100 miles an hour to hitter is maybe not the most humane thing to do. When you're a player and you get caught up in a game like that, how do you feel about that? Because you never know who's going to get plunked next, and you might not even be... And oftentimes a batter won't even be deserving of that kind of treatment, but it's part of the game. What do you think about all that?
Well, just playing baseball, you know, just going out there and, you know, you can't think about those things. Just go out there and, you know, if something happens, it happens, and, you know, you can't be worried about it. You just got to control what you can control, which for us as players is just go out there and, you know, have good at-bats and, you know, just play the game hard.
All right, you had a big home run last night. How did that feel to go deep here?
I felt good, you know, just to get a, you know, a big hit in that situation, and especially the way the game was going, and it was just nice to contribute. You know, I just want to be, you know, part of the boys, and, you know, just be another piece of the puzzle. So it was nice to be able to do that last night.
Yeah, I mean, you're hitting right around 300 before you get here, and you know the hits are going to come, but I imagine on some level it is big just to get that first one right, and then you sort of feel like you're more a part of the team.
Yeah, like I said, you know, I just want to contribute any way I can. So, you know, it was nice to, you know, get a couple knocks and, you know, score some runs and whatnot. But, you know, it's a long season and, you know, just one day at a time.
All right, you mentioned you want to be one of the boys. And I know every clubhouse is similar and every clubhouse is different. Give us some of your early vibes on this group. What sets this group apart? What kind of vibe do you get from this team in terms of its chemistry, camaraderie, and brotherhood?
Yeah, I've seen great things from this clubhouse. You know, you can tell how close guys are and, like, how guys care. I mean, you go in the weight room, you go around the cage, and you see guys working early, and, you know, that's what it's all about. You know, that shows you care. You know, guys that take things personal, they want to get better every day. That's showing you care, and that creates a great you know, clubhouse.
Did you know anybody or have any connections with anybody on this team before you got here, or are you just coming in here brand new?
Yeah, I know a couple guys, you know, pretty well, and that I played with before and all that, and, you know, just met different guys. So it's nice to be able to have some familiar faces and stuff like that, so yeah. It's nice.
Now, summers in Kansas City are a lot different than summers in Arizona, man. You ready for all this heat here?
Yeah, I love the heat.
Really?
You know, born and raised in Miami, so
okay. Yeah,
I like the heat.
You got your Hurricanes a hat on, right?
Yeah, okay. Always.
Well, that's good. It's a you thing, right? Is that what they used to say?
It's all about the you.
That's right. It's all about the you. Exactly. All right. So what did you want to do when you came to the team? Obviously, being slotted as a leadoff hitter is something the team has needed. What do you want to bring? What do you want to mean to this team individually?
Well, I just want to, you know, I want to go out there, be myself, just be consistent, you know. Like I said, you know, there's a lot of great pieces on this team. I'm just trying to be, you know, another piece, you know, another compliment to, you know, great core guys they have. And, you know, the pitching, defense, just, you know, I just want to be part of it, so.
What was your perception of this team before you got here when you're over in Kansas City? I mean, you see that they make the playoffs this year, last year they end up getting swept by L.A., but you see a lot of offensive talent on this roster.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I've been a big fan of a lot of guys on this team for a long time. I mean, Paul Goldschmidt, I've always, you know, even, you know, before he started making all-star teams and all that, you know, I was always just a huge fan of, you know, what he did, what he brought to the table every single day, and, you know, the talents there. And, you know, last year was a huge building step of, you know, getting to the playoffs and getting that experience and then, you know, kind of building off that for the guys and, you know, seeing what it's all about and, you know, staying hungry with it. And you see the guys are hungry now. They want to get back to the playoffs and, you know, go on a run. So that's what it's all about.
All right. So why don't you give some of our listeners, Diamondback fans, an idea of who you are, not just as a baseball player. What are you all about? What do you like to do when you're not playing baseball?
I'm simple. I like to be outside. Like I said, I'm from Miami, Florida, so, you know, I like to be in the water. I like to just be outside. I really enjoy the sun. I like being outside. And
well, you got a great tan, man.
Yeah, thank you. I don't work on and off. It comes naturally.
Right.
And, you know, at home, you know, I'm married with twin daughters. They're about a year and a half, so
oh,
that's taken over my life. And, and I'm really enjoying, you know, being a dad. And so, you know, everything is now about the kids. So just trying to do fun things with the kids every day and, you know, enjoying that part of life now.
Yeah, I tell this to everybody. My daughter was my first child, and it was all awesome. Like, you're experiencing now. Just wait till they get to about 16, dude.
Yeah, it's all right. I got double trouble right now.
you came to the right place for the son, certainly. If you... You know, you make that move mid-season. You mentioned you got a family and everything. I would assume on the one hand you're looking at a team that's a playoff contender, first place in the NL West. That's great to make that move. But on the other hand, there is the real aspect of it. If you got to pick up your family and move things around mid-season, is that a challenge?
Yeah, you know, it's just something that that comes with the territory. But that's stuff that goes on behind the scenes that you know, you deal with, and you know, it's part of the game. And you know, my wife is, you know, she's my number one supporter, and she makes sure that everything gets taken care of. So she's doing a great job with that right now, and, you know, just figuring out the next move. But, you know, we're just taking it one day at a time right now, and she understands how this business works. And so, you know, but there are a lot of logistics off the field, but, you know, we'll get it taken care of.
All right, finally, Luke had mentioned about how the team has been undefeated since you've arrived, and obviously it's all you, man. It's obviously that's happened here. And I'm kidding, of course, but do you see the team catching a winning vibe from a guy who's been in a lot of organizations? You obviously have heard of the struggles they had in May. Now they've got this thing going back in the right direction. Do you sense that sort of maybe new energy that, okay, we've got this thing back on track?
I don't know. You know, that's not for me to answer. But I definitely, like I said, I have a lot of respect for these guys, and I follow them a lot. And, you know, they have that winning attitude. They know, you know, things are going to happen. You're not going to have, you know, there's some months that aren't going to be your best months or whatnot, but it's how you react. And like I said, the first thing I see is everyone working hard. Everyone is here with a positive attitude, like, if, you know, nothing ever happened in May. So, and that's the attitude you want to have. You know, in baseball, you never know what's going to happen, and there's a reason we play 162 games. It's a long one. So, you know, that's the attitude you got to stay. You got to stay even keel, and that's what I see from the guys.
Well, John, great meeting you. Great talking to you. Continued success to you. Thank you for your time today. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
That's John Jay from Arizona Diamondbacks. 1240 pitch today, going for a sweep against the Pittsburgh Pirates. Team got this thing back on the rails. All right, coming up on the other side, Cardinals camp starting yesterday. Big quarterback battle that's going to consume the summer. Josh Rosen, Sam Bradford, what does it mean? Where is it going? That's next. Luke Lipinski, Dan Bickley, you're listening to 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
You know, he's done a great job. You know, I think I've been impressed just with his ability to grasp things mentally. You know, coach has thrown a lot at all of us, you know, in trying to learn this system. You know, and it's tough for a rookie to be able to come in and to understand everything that's being asked of him. And I think he's done a tremendous job of that. And then physically, you know, he's just really gifted. You know, you can see he can make all the throws. You know, he's got plenty of arm strength to push the ball outside the numbers, to push it downfield. You know, but I would say the thing that stood out most to me is probably his ability to grasp things mentally.
All right, that the voice of Sam Bradford talking sweet about the kid who might take his job, Josh Rosen. You like to hear that. And starting yesterday and continuing today and tomorrow really marks the beginning of this quarterback competition in earnest. And that's for a very simple reason. Throughout all of minicamp or throughout OTAs, I get all this stuff mixed up, Luke. Before it was mandatory.
Yeah, there's like 9,000 different names working out.
Yeah, the stuff that happened before this week. Okay. All that stuff.
All right.
Okay, all that stuff. And all that time, the coaching staff wanted to put Sam Bradford on a leash to make sure when we got to minicamp, he was at as close to optimum health as he could be. Now, according to most people, that is where Sam Bradford is, in a state where he feels very strong physically. He's had time to digest the playbook, and starting yesterday, he was dropped into 11-on-11 drills for the first time. And as a result, so is Josh Rosen, and this is the first time where these two guys can go head-to-head with the same kind of baseline and the same measure of judgment.
I'm trying to figure out who's going to get tired of answering questions first, whether it's going to be Sam Bradford about Josh Rosen or Steve Wilks about David Johnson not being there. Because the Bradford-Rosen dynamic is fine now, and I'm hopeful it'll be fine all season long. But where it starts to get a little sideways is whenever Bradford struggles at all, which, you know, every quarterback at some point in the season struggles. Even if he goes out there and has a tremendous year, he's going to have interceptions. He's going to have a couple bad games. They're going to lose games where he's the quarterback. And it just feels like the second that happens, fair or not, depending when it happens, there's going to just be crushing weight of so much focus on Josh Rosen, because if Rosen's not playing, then obviously he's perfect at that point.
Well, that's exactly right. And so there are a couple things about this. I think, number one, you mentioned just sort of the day-to-day monitoring of this situation, at least as it relates to when the Cardinals are actually practicing.
It's not even training camp yet.
It's not even training camp yet, and this is going to be a day-to-day thing. How did Josh look? How did Sam look? Who looked better? That kind of thing. Organization's been very smart about the way they've handled this whole scenario. I think Steve Wilks initially phrased it perfectly when he said, Sam is our starter, but the competition's open. Okay, that basically covers everything. Pacifies the veteran, justifies all the money you paid to Sam Bradford, yet at the same time, you're not ignoring the possibility that this rookie that fell into your laps might actually be a better choice. Steve Keim yesterday morning flat out said, look, it's too early to forecast where this whole thing is going. And so instead of sort of minimizing all of this and trying to prop up Sam Bradford, they're just acknowledging what is real here, and that is you've got a starter right now in Sam Bradford, who, when he's right, he looks very, very good. In fact, Steve Keim said, every time I see him throw the ball, I'm reminded why he was the number one pick in the draft.
Yeah. Yeah, people forget that. I mean, he was the number one pick in the draft, and he hasn't performed to that level. But when he's on the field, which is obviously the great caveat with Sam Bradford, but when he's out there, especially recently, once he got away from the Rams, he has been a very effective quarterback. And it's not a reach if he's able to play most of this season to think of him as maybe a fringe top 10 quarterback in the NFL this year. And if you have that with the team you have around him, you want to ride that as long as you can.
I think that yesterday, today, and tomorrow, it's really just going to set the baseline for this competition, because after Thursday, they all disappear. They come back in July, and that is when it is just on.
Yeah.
So this is sort of like a little appetizer where nobody can play themselves out of this competition. But if they leave and it sounds and feels like it's equal, then I think that's just kind of going to forecast what we're going to be in for this summer.
This week right here feels like a teaser for a movie, and the movie comes out in July, basically.
Yeah.
That's essentially what this is. It's, as long as neither one of them goes out there and just looks terrible or gets hurt or whatever, then it's just setting the stage for July and August.
In a world where two quarterbacks have to become one.
No, Jared, you got to do it like Vinny does.
I can't do it as good as him.
This summer.
Oh, like it is the summer, too.
Well, it is. You're right.
Yeah, well, that's perfect. We just need a name
exactly,
for it.
Exactly. Right, exactly. And that's basically what is going to go on. And I think the other good thing about this is when we get to the end of tomorrow and these guys all disappear, I think the David Johnson story kind of maybe just disappears for a little bit. There's a big window of opportunity for these two parties to try to get this thing done. And the more people look at the future and the promise of Josh Rosen, maybe stacked up against Sam Bradford, wow, that guy really is healthy, and wow, maybe he actually is a really viable alternative, the less focus there's going to be on a running back who happens to want more money.
The more we talk about this, the more I'm starting to think that had to be at least some of the logic behind David Johnson's decision for this week, or whoever made the decision of, you do this week, I guess you send a message. That part I still don't really get, because I think it's just as easy to go into Steve Keim's office and be like, hey, guess what? I'm the 27th highest paid running back this season or something, and we both know that's not
right.
Real fair, and I'm whatever. But I guess on some level, you do this now, and then you've got a month and a half to get things worked out before training camp starts. I'd much rather, and the Cardinals would, and David Johnson would as well, much rather that he misses three mandatory minicamp days, I guess, in the middle of June, but they don't mean anything to him or this offense when it boils right down to it.
Yeah.
Him and his involvement in this offense.
And you know what? What you just said there might also be at the root of all of this. Because clearly David Johnson, when he's participating in voluntary workouts and then suddenly isn't, this obviously was a strategy that was suddenly, we're doing this now. For him to show up and for this to become public the way it did, you're right. It's not a subtle message. It's not a bullhorn message. It's somewhere in between. But it kind of lets everybody know this is serious to me.
And you've got time to work it out. It's not like you did this at the start of training camp when every day training camp's going or there's a preseason game where you're getting closer to the season.
That's right. And the team, and they could have come up with any million different reasons to explain why David Johnson wasn't participating over the course of four practices. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they could have said anything.
They could have said anything. So on some level, a statement had to be made by David Johnson and his representatives and his interests. I've said this before. I just think David Johnson's heart's probably half into this, knowing what I think I know about the guy, but I think he's been convinced this is something you have to do. One of the things I went back and looked at, David Johnson, during an interview I had with him in one of the first columns I wrote for ArizonaSports.com, was a lengthy interview with him one-on-one where he spoke very passionately about all these lessons that Larry Fitzgerald has taught him, from how to dress, how to, you know, behave, how to be in the community. And one of the things was how to be financially smart. David Johnson and Larry Fitzgerald have formed a good relationship to the point where they're needling each other, they get into each other. Don't you think it's very conceivable that Larry Fitzgerald not only understands what David Johnson is doing, but counseled him to do it?
It certainly wouldn't shock me. Let me put it that way, right? I mean,
yeah.
if you're a player, and not just a player, but a player in a very prominent role on a team, and it's going to be tough for anybody to ever be the next Larry Fitzgerald, and especially, you know, fair or unfair, David Johnson plays running back. His career is just not going to be as long as Larry Fitzgerald's.
That's right.
So it's going to be difficult for anybody to fill those shoes, but there's a certain level of camaraderie when you're a couple of the best players on the team. Yeah, I absolutely, I don't know that happened, but it wouldn't shock me if Larry Fitzgerald was like, look, this is probably my last year, so
yeah.
I'd prefer you were out there, but yeah. I understand you have to take care of yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that a guy like Larry Fitzgerald, who has seen David Johnson at his best and who knows what workload David Johnson has shouldered, he would be of the mind, dude, that's just wrong. Because Larry Fitzgerald, he's got this unbelievable reputation and image in the Valley. That also includes a guy who has been cutthroat and ruthless with the Cardinals when it came to his own contracts.
Yeah.
There was a time when Rod Graves had to rush a contract to him at the airport before Larry took off out of town. Larry always won those battles. And Larry, aside from a great football career, he has crafted one of the best economic careers of any football player I can imagine. And I think that he would actually be supportive in David Johnson at least getting something fair and playing this situation the right way. But I think Larry is all, and think about David now. We know David's a people pleaser. He's not going to want to anger a new coach or a new regime. He certainly does not want to sabotage what could be Larry Fitzgerald's last year as a football player.
That's the thing. If things go south this season and he's not there at the start of camp or whatever, it's possible people are going to point to him and be like, look, it all started when David Johnson just didn't show up to camp or whatnot. I mean, is it inconceivable? Because I just keep going back to the initial Schefter tweet and then the switch to he's skipping. Not holding out, but he's skipping. Is it possible he just said, look, if you're only going to pay me $1.88 million, I'm just going to skip minicamp?
Yeah.
I'm not
conceivable.
But he just shows up for training camp.
Conceivable. Yeah, that's very, very conceivable. But I think that he's obviously wants to limit his exposure and potential injury risks, all that kind of stuff. All right, plenty more on the Cardinals coming up later in the program. When we get back, found out one thing DeAndre Ayton is really bad about entering the upcoming NBA draft. He's Luke Lipinski. I'm Dan Bickley. You're listening to 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Suns Insider Update.
All right, the NBA draft coming up next week. I'll be in New York. Gamble will be working the phones. We'll have round tables, tons of coverage, everything you need to know about the NBA draft. You're going to get right here on Arizona Sports and ArizonaSports.com. DeAndre Ayton, still under the radar as the number one pick in the draft. I know there are some trade rumors floating, maybe not even rumors, maybe just wish list kind of things. But I ran across a very interesting story on DeAndre Ayton in SI.com. And shortly after the NBA draft lottery, a writer took him to Topgolf in Scottsdale. And apparently this guy is just a shankopotamus.
Well, Top Golf is the type of golf to play if you can't hit the ball straight.
That right, and so and there are pictures of him, and he looks very much like an impact center from first glance. Big dude, but apparently could not hit a golf ball straight to save his life. Now, over the course of their outing at Top Golf, there were a couple of interesting things. Number one, DeAndre Ayton apparently has got a very funny personality. He likes to crack jokes. He's got an entertainment kind of bent to him, if you will. You know what I mean?
That's good.
Maybe
that's
like a mini Shaq.
It gets lost in the shuffle here with the Suns. As you're building this team, you can't draft based on this. I get that. You can't make trades or free agents based on this. But it would be nice to build a team with a personality too, correct?
Oh, yeah. Oh, without a doubt.
And Booker's got one.
Yeah.
But, you know, you look at the NBA, you've essentially got a 12-man roster.
Yeah.
So, and when you get good, 7 or 8 of them are playing. So
right.
Those guys, if DeAndre Ayton comes in with no personality, that's a major part of your team, a major face of your team that is just kind of, it sounds like he's not that guy.
During DeAndre Ayton's day at Topgolf, the writer says you get two different Andres. One, if you're talking basketball, he says all the right things. If you're talking about anything else, all the guy does is crack jokes about himself and everyone around him. He ordered, get this, 2 desserts at lunch. A massive brownie sundae and a Snickers pie.
Snickers pie?
Yeah.
That's a thing?
That's a thing.
All
2 desserts at lunch. Okay,
I know
that's
we're
right.
Going at 2 o'clock.
but this is what was really interesting. And for people who don't know the background of DeAndre Ayton, grew up in Nassau in the Bahamas. At a very early age, he attracted the attention of scouts. So he was a 12-year-old who was 6'5". And then suddenly he was whisked off to San Diego because his family realized he can get a free education, he can use basketball. Suddenly he grew to 6'10", and here he goes. But this is what's different. While as a 12-year-old, when he was moved to San Diego, for the next few years, DeAndre Ayton lived with 3 different host families, spent his weekends traveling the grassroots hoop circuit, not in touch with anybody from his real family at that time, and says, quote, "Sometimes I'd go a month without talking to my mother. You were in the gym from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. It was like a job." When asked about his life with these host families, quote, "They did a good job of taking care of me, but it didn't just feel right to me. Like I was comfortable, but it just felt weird. It was very awkward." Now, during this period, Luke, when he was living this life of, okay, we've got this young prodigy with crazy size, we've got to get him to seize this opportunity and a better life for himself in America. He flat out said he really didn't have a childhood. He said there would be he would have friends he would meet, and they'd say, "Hey, man, you ever go to Disneyland?" And he would lie and say yes, but he said he never got a chance to do any of that stuff. I don't know what you think about that, but I always feel bad for kids who get thrown into something like that because their skill set and their talent looks so unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't know that I feel bad because, I mean, there's a lot of kids that don't get to have a childhood for much worse reasons, I guess. But it does make me... you always have that sort of concern, or maybe not concern, but at least thought, when you're going to take somebody number one overall or very high in a draft, you want to make sure that at 18, 19 years old, they're not going to come in entitled.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to be an issue with DeAndre Ayton. I've never met the kid, but
right.
you look at what he has gone through just to get to this point, and you're right. He sacrificed a decent amount of his childhood, but also just he had to work so hard just to get to this country, to be able to get that education and to work his way up to being the number one pick in the draft. That, to me, does not scream entitlement on any level.
The story of DeAndre Ayton then goes, his mom came, got him out of San Diego, moved him here to the Valley. Went to school here, went to Arizona. All the stuff about the NBA or the FBI investigation said, you know what, this is not what I came to college for. The exposure I was looking for in college was not exactly what I got. So you put it all together, and it hasn't been an ideal journey for DeAndre Ayton.
No.
So I think it kind of plays into what you say, and it kind of makes you it makes me feel a little more better or a little better about his hunger, his determination, maybe where this is all going. Now, back to this interview. Check out this zinger he threw at Michael Porter Jr. So he's at lunch with this reporter from SI after he shanked golf balls and devoured 2 desserts. reporter asks him, hey, you saw that Michael Porter Jr. say he was the best player in the draft, right? DeAndre Ayton looked up, tilted his head, and said, what draft is he in? What
I like
draft
it. I like it.
Is he in?
How about the top of this draft this year? Just what we've heard from some of the top prospects. And I know that our perspective is a little bit different this year because Phoenix has the number one pick. So we're looking at it closer, and we're also getting a lot of these quotes from right here in town.
Right.
But you have Bagley being upset and sort of bristling at the fact that Ayton just assumes it's a foregone conclusion he's going number one. You've got Bamba repeatedly talking about how he's the answer for the Suns. Ayton flat out saying, I know I'm going number one. Porter saying, I mean, there's going to be, it feels like we're at least setting the stage for some pretty nice rivalries among these top four, five, six prospects in this draft.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Jarrett Carlin, as a guy who has seen more of DeAndre Ayton than anybody, does anything about those details, how does it dovetail into what you think about him?
No, it doesn't matter. It's to me, it's the same problems. I have to see it on the court. I have to see him play hard, you know, every game. So I don't care about all the stuff he says.
But you know what's weird is that
Snicker Pie thing, maybe. But
yeah, right.
I didn't even know that was an option.
But the thing is that in all of these stories about him, the one thing all he continually says is that he has busted his backside on both sides of the court, that nobody works harder than him. But that doesn't jive with what you have seen as a Wildcats fan, at least not consistently.
I'm a very pessimistic U of A fan.
No yeah. way, really?
And I'm very, very hard and deeply analytical. I look for the bad things. So it's possible that I didn't give him the benefit of the doubt because he was very good, and the way that the season ended really soured put a sour taste in my mouth. So maybe I'm harder on him than I should be, but I definitely noticed a lot of those flaws.
All right, now the trade scenario that we talked about today that you brought up, Jared, was that a thing?
No,
that was just something.
My idea.
This was your idea.
Because
your idea was for the Suns to trade the number one draft pick and then a combination of players to make the money work, whether it's Jared Dudley or Brandon Knight or
Tyson Chandler. Yeah.
And you would send that pick to Memphis in exchange for the fourth overall pick and Mike Conley.
That way, you could still get your big man. Bamba would probably be there at four, who a lot of people love, say could be the steal of the draft, and you get your point guard, and you get that star player, not a superstar, but a star player that you probably couldn't get free agency-wise.
I'm not sure I like that trade. I don't know if I like a team with Mohamed Bamba, Mike Conley, Devin Booker, TJ Warren, and Josh Jackson.
It's fine. It just feels like there's a ceiling. I understand where Jarrett's going with it, but I guess maybe I'm a little bit in the minority here, but my biggest level of excitement for DeAndre Ayton isn't that he's a big man. I don't think the Suns need to go out and get a big man. I think there's something to the notion that Golden State just won another title without a real big man, per se. I just like Ayton because of his upside and his skill set. And I do think there are questions, but I think there are less questions with him than everybody else in this
draft.
Yeah,
I agree with that. I do.
I don't care about the big man. If you can convince me I can do that and maybe get Bagley or Doncic, okay, I'm listening.
Right. I don't know. The fact that DeAndre Ayton can power down two desserts at lunch, that puts it over the top for me. Mohamed Bamba just can't compete with that in my mind.
I want to see a top golf tournament, and I should probably be on NBA TV at some point over the summer.
Yeah, and Mike Conley, nice player, but a very expensive player. He makes $27 million a year, and that's, I don't know. Jarrett, I think you have to keep walking
with
that
math. What is that, about 18 times as much as David Johnson makes per year? Give or take.
Don't remind David Johnson of that, okay? Whatever you do, Luke, don't remind David Johnson of that. All right, coming up at 11 o'clock hour, we're going to visit with Clay Buchholz of the Diamondbacks. We're going to get into this concept of tunneling with some of the things Mike Hazen had to say earlier today. Lots of stuff coming your way. We are live at Chase Field. You got something to say, Luke?
Well, I had a read, and now
okay,
it's gone.
Go ahead, man.
You know what? I'll just do it off the top of my head.
There we go.
Oh, no, here it is. Of course, this week we're qualifying you for the Chosen Sun Ultimate Draft Experience in New York City. If you haven't entered already, text DRAFT to 620-620 and listen every day this week. It's already Wednesday at 7:15 a.m., 12:15, and 4:15 for your name. At that point, you have only 10 minutes to call and claim your official Suns draft hat and a qualifying spot for the grand prize trip to New York. So once again, text DRAFT to 620-620 and listen all this week for the ultimate draft experience.
Oh, there you go. He is Luke Lipinski. I'm Dan Bickley. We're back right after this.